Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Cosmic Connection. We are here today for your September forecast. The theme is Hold Your Fire, which Rick is going to talk about here in just a second. Before we dive in, I just wanted to make a very exciting announcement. We actually have a pre-sale opportunity for Rick's upcoming Astrology Foundations course. So if you know that you're like, I'm all in, I want to join that course, you actually can join us now. And what you'll get is instant access to two of your bonuses, actually. One of them is the mastery class on quincunxes that Rick did for our inner circle. The other is a 50% discount on the astrology of relationships, which is a workshop that Rick did for us last year as well. So if you want to join the Astrology Foundations course, it's officially starting on October 4th, but you can jump in right now and start to take advantage of some of your bonuses and just reserve your spot. So if you'd like to do that, you can go to astrologyhub.com/foundations. That's astrologyhub.com/foundations. One more thing. If you're an Inner Circle member, you do have a discount. Look in your membership portal for the discount code. If you are a Patreon member with Rick, you just received an email last night through the Patreon platform. That's where you'll get your discount code. So Inner Circle members and Patreon members both get 20% off this course. So go check it out. And we're so excited to have you join us for this amazing opportunity to learn from Rick from the ground up. And if you love what you learn here on this podcast, it's going to be like in one spot, you know, not just piecemeal things. You're going to get in one spot a system for how to look at the signs, the aspects, the planets, and, you know, all things astrology. So anything you want to add to that, Rick, before we dive in?
I'm excited. I want to take the course too.
You will be.
Well, you know, I've said this before, but it doesn't matter how much astrology you do, how long you do it. When I go to conferences and someone can be giving a lecture, you know, about the effects of Venus or Mercury or what trines, I mean, it's always wider and deeper. And so although this is a foundations course, it's, you know, whether even if you're an advanced student or even a practicing professional, we always gain more from another person's perspective on what we know. At least I know I do. I always say that, I mean, there's more things I want to learn about astrology now after doing it for some 40 some odd years than I thought I wanted to learn when I began learning it.
Rick, when I first started interviewing astrologers 5 years ago, this was the thing that stood out to me the most, is how passionate astrologers were decades into their practice. I mean, just alive, on fire, still so excited about the field and what more there is to discover and learn. And I just don't feel like you see that everywhere in every field. So it was something that for me was like, whoa, this is unique and really special. So we're really excited to have all of you, any of you students that want to join us. And it's a 5-module course. So we'll be releasing it. The first module will start on October 4th. And then weekly on Sundays, you'll receive your next lesson. Every week, we're also doing a live Q&A session with Rick. And this will be the only time we offer this course where there will be a live component like this. So check it out, astrologyhub.com/foundations. Okay.
All right.
So Rick, last month, the theme was, we're not in Kansas anymore. And I'd love for all of you to just take a moment and reflect. Do you feel like that is true for you? I know for me, absolutely. There's so many things that have happened where it's like, okay, like this is a new trajectory that we're on. Not that it wasn't before, but it just seems a little bit more solid in that. So we're not in Kansas anymore. And before that was remedial education. And before that, it was like riding the razor's edge. I'm trying to remember all the themes.
No, you're way better than I am. I can't remember what I had for breakfast.
So tell us about September. What is the theme for this month and why?
Well, before we go into this month, if we're not in Kansas anymore, my question is, where the heck are we?
I don't think any of us know. I got to tell you, I was talking to my daughter, Madeline. She's 11. She goes, we were talking about everything that's happening. She goes, Mama.
I have a new name for Madeline. It's Madeline the Wise.
Oh, totally. She goes, Mama, yeah. I don't think you know. I don't think I know. I don't think anybody knows what's going on. I was like, you know what? I think you're right.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know where we are, but I know when we are. And that's really what astrology does. Astrology doesn't tell us where we are going. It tells us when we are going, you know? And the when for September is very interesting. There's some different flavors that are coming into the mix. And there's some inklings, not only that we're not in Kansas anymore, but there's some inklings that we're actually going somewhere. And yet it's hard to tell where we're going, but it feels like everything seems more urgent this month than it ever has before. In the United States, it certainly could be partly due to the pressure of the presidential election coming up, but that's not the energetic thrust. It's almost like that becomes a symptom of how we're all being pushed to our limits, and we're ready to do something drastic to fix the situation. And in my monthly write-up, I used this. I said that we were ready to rectify whatever situation gets our goat. And for some people may not know that that's actually a saying. To get your goat means to bother you. And yet I used that because the goat here is the Capricorn Planetary Council that has not adjourned its meeting, even though there's movement in that committee. That committee's been holding hearings and been holding court, and this month, so there were three major planets that were involved in this council meeting, if you will, and that is Saturn, which moved into Capricorn 2.5 years ago, actually now almost three years ago. And Pluto and Jupiter, which has only moved in there last December. So we have these three heavyweight planets, and they all turned retrograde earlier this spring. And they set up this whole remedial education, the not so fast, the feeling like we're going backwards, like it's like we're treading water, but we're not getting anywhere. Or we're on a treadmill, but we're not getting anywhere. And into that mix of retrograde energy came a Mercury retrograde and then a Venus retrograde. And there, the little planets are now moving direct. But in September, we have Jupiter is the first of the heavyweights to turn direct. That's on September 12th. And then it's followed by Saturn on September 28th. And then followed by Pluto in October. But we have... it's almost like they're going from the fastest moving to the slowest moving, Jupiter, then Saturn, then Pluto, as they're reversing and moving into their direct motion. But here's the thing, is that even though Jupiter doesn't turn direct until September 12th, it's barely moving right now. Because when a planet, and I've said this 100 times, maybe 111 times, when a planet changes directions, it's like a pendulum swinging back and forth. And in order for a pendulum to change directions, it slows down and then comes to a complete stop. And then when it starts, it barely moves. And then it gains speed so that at the bottom of the swing is when it's moving the fastest. What that means is that for all practical purposes, Jupiter hasn't moved for a week or so. And it won't move for another week or so. And then when it turns direct, it still won't move. Yes, technically, it's moving a minute, 1/60th of a degree in a day, or, you know, and then 2 or 3 minutes. But from a larger perspective, the damn biggest planet in the sky ain't moving. Now, when a planet goes slower, it carries more weight. The reason why we all know Mercury retrograde so well is because Mercury is the fastest moving of the regular planets. And so when it slows down and changes directions, it actually happens pretty quickly. Over a day or two, you can tell. It's like being in a car going 50 miles an hour, screeching on the brakes and going into reverse. You know it. But if you're in an 18-wheeler Mack truck in a parking lot and you're inching along, I mean, just barely inching, and you then put that into reverse, you might not even notice. Oh, there's a subtle change, but it's a different energy. So that's what we got going on, not only with Jupiter that turns direct after its retrograde motion, it turns direct on September 12th, and not only with Saturn that turns direct on the 28th, but also with Pluto that has slowed down. And remember, these guys have been retrograde since May, actually. Jupiter turned retrograde and Saturn turned retrograde in May, and Pluto turned retrograde in late April. So the Capricorn stellium lineup council cluster, whatever word you want to add after cluster, is basically gaining even more power right now. But here's why September is hold your fire. Because Mars, which has the most peculiar of all the retrograde motions, because when Mars turns retrograde, it only does it every almost 2 years, a year and three quarters. And when it turns retrograde, it basically turns retrograde for 2 months, unlike Venus's 40 days or Mercury's 20 to 22 days. And what that means is that Mars, which entered Aries a couple of months ago, actually the end of June, doesn't leave Aries until the first week of January of next year. And so what that means is that even though Mars doesn't turn retrograde until September 9th, it isn't very moving right now. It's within, in fact, Mars squared Saturn the last week of October. And when Mars squared Saturn, it was about 25 degrees of Aries squaring Saturn.
You mean August? August, right?
Yeah, what did I say?
October,
I was future thinking. Yes, I meant August. So Mars squared Saturn the end of August at about 25 degrees of Aries square to Saturn at about 25 degrees of Capricorn. Mars barely moves all month because it moves up to 27 degrees and then back to 25 degrees. And by the end of the month, Mars is squaring Saturn again on the 29th at 25 degrees. So we might as well think, even though technically there was some 35 days or so, 35, 40 days between Mars's direct square to Saturn and its retrograde square to Saturn, the fact of the matter is that Saturn ain't ever left its hold. Saturn is a hold. It's structure, it's stability, it's holding things still. The st sound in English is Saturnian, and so we have stasis, stillness, stuck, stability, you know, constriction, restriction, all these words that are holding, Saturn is holding in the fiery, feisty, energetic expression of Mars. And so Mars is really crossing swords with Saturn, who does rule the roost. When it comes to the real planets, and when I say real planets, I mean the ones that we can see with the naked eye. I mean the sun and the moon, even though moderners say they're not planets, but we astrologers say a planet in the Greek sense of planeta is anything that wanders in the sky. So with the sun, moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn is the ultimate it is the buck stops at Saturn. That is the finality. That is the authority. And feisty, fiery Mars at home in Aries, where it is supercharged and energetic, more so than it is in any sign. It's ready to hit back when it is hit. It's ready to express what it feels. It's spontaneous. It's impulsive. It's energetic. And Saturn's going, you ain't going nowhere. And so, so Saturn is basically thwarting our best efforts all month and forcing us to cool our jets. Now, unfortunately, what happens is that when Mars runs into the authority of Saturn, typically an unbridled Mars, meaning a Mars at home in Aries, is just going to get angrier and redder and hotter, because Mars is the angry red planet, and Mars is going to figure out how to strike back. So the September keywords of hold your fire is not about going passive. It's not about denying your anger. It's not about going into some sort of avoidance of the confrontation with authority. It's simply the realization that Mars likes immediate gratification, and it's impulsive. And Saturn is compulsive, and it always is going to go for the long haul. Now, of course, Saturn's long haul is not as long as Pluto's long haul, and Mars will eventually not only square Saturn, but it will also retrograde back and square Pluto and Jupiter also, but not until October. And so it's more important than ever to keep our eye on the distance. When you're out walking, look at the tops of trees. Look at clouds. Anything that draws us out into the distance is healthy and helpful now, not so that we avoid what's going on in the present, but so we don't, as I've said before, end up winning every battle but being so exhausted that we lose the war. This is a war, and I don't necessarily mean political. I mean emotional. I mean personal. I mean life ambitions. I mean every aspect of our life right now, that Mars is hot to trot, and as it goes retrograde and continues retrograde through the end of September, all of October, and into November, as Mars goes retrograde more and more and more, it gets hotter and hotter and hotter. In fact, this is when Mars is closest to the sun. That date actually will be in October. And that's when we feel this energy the most, but the frustration will be there and the temptation for immediate gratification is strong. And that's the thing that'll screw us up. So that's why hold your fire. I mean, there's a lot more going on. Even the fact that when the outer planets, Jupiter and Saturn, both turn direct, they're not moving backwards as fast as they were, neither is Pluto. So the backwards movement is slowing down, and then there's a turn. And it's almost like it feels like the ties that have been holding us back are loosening. But that's a trick, because that gets Mars all jazzed up to do something like right now. And what we need to do is to focus on the long haul rather than the short haul. The feeling that progress is like within reach is only going to exacerbate the frustration that we feel as Mars goes through this entire retrograde, and its lingering square to Saturn that isn't exact on the retrograde till the end of until the end of September. But then Mars is retrograde for a couple of months. Mars turns direct in the week after Election Day in the United States. Well, it turns direct everywhere on that day, but it's Election Day in the United States. And then Mars makes its third and final square with Saturn the end of the year. And actually, Saturn and Jupiter both move into Aquarius at the end of December, and there's a whole new ball game. But it's that whole new ball game that we need to be focusing on, and the things that we do now, we can see the forward motion. In fact, we'll see it again when Mercury enters Libra on September 15th, followed by Venus on September 6th. September 5th, Mercury moves into Libra, and on September 6th, Venus moves into Leo. And this again is a tease, because when Mercury was in, Mercury was in Virgo and Venus was in Cancer, Venus in Cancer is kind of timid, receptive, indrawn, tender. It's soft. It's definitely a yin energy. Venus, that was Venus in Cancer. Mercury in Virgo, even though Mercury is at home in Virgo, Virgo is also thinking. It's analytical. It's logical. It's not action oriented. It's process oriented. And so as Venus enters Libra, where we're wanting to weigh the inner and the outer, it's a yang energy, even though people think Libra is indecisive, it's not at all. It's the active process of deciding and weighing and judging. It's the strategist. And with Venus moving from indrawn Cancer to expressive Leo, we have Mercury and Venus both moving from yin to yang energies. They're both moving outward. And again, the energy is flowing outward, but not as fast as we wanted to. And so that kind of sets the month up. There's obviously more. There's our typical run of new moons and full moons. Actually, we just had the full moon, which was a very powerful full moon, because it had, again, that the full moon that we had on September 1st or on the morning of the 2nd, depending on whether you were East Coast or West Coast of the United States or where in the planet you were. That full moon was a trine to Uranus, which again is breakthrough, but the temptation is to take that breakthrough and break through everything, and that's where we will fall short. The same thing is true at the new moon, which is a Virgo new moon on September 17th. And that same new moon, or that same concept, is that new moon, even though it's a seed period, even though it's a time where we plant our intentions, And again, we will have Jupiter having already turned direct. There'll be other energy that'll be expressive. There'll be some squares going on to Jupiter. Right around the new moon on the 17th, we have Venus squaring Uranus. That is electric. We have Mercury squaring Jupiter on the 17th, same day as the new moon. That's outgoing. And yet the new moon in Virgo says, the smaller the seed you plant, the greater the results. So again, we have the same message of hold your fire. It doesn't mean hold your fire forever. It doesn't mean that there isn't something to do. It just means that small is beautiful. Little, focused, narrow. It's narrow casting rather than broadcasting. And so the energy is flowing outward. And then when the sun shifts from Virgo into Libra, it's another bump in that same outward direction. Now, even though on a grander scale, Libra, it begins the 6 months of the cycle where the energy is pulling in. It's interesting because in Virgo, the energy is still moving outward. You know, that in Aries, the cycle begins, and the first six signs have their plus, minus, but the energy is moving outward. And in Virgo, the energy is still moving outward, but it's moving outward at a slower and slower rate day by day, until in Libra, it stops. That's the equinox. There's a balance between the outward and the inward, which, if anyone's ever been to the New England, the northeast in the United States at the time of year of Libra, you see the colors because of the sugar maples, in absolutely perfect balance. And there's something about that perfect day in October, driving through the hills of Vermont, where the trees are green and yellow and red and orange and brown, and the sun is intense and bright, and it's like, wow. It's like hung in the balance. And then, of course, the sun moves into Scorpio and everything dies. Yeah. Oh, whoops, that happens next. But at the autumn equinox, again, we are encouraged to find balance in relationships, in our internal thinking, in all interactions. And just as we find that balance by the end of the month, Mercury, which is moving really quickly, remember, Mercury moved into Libra, or will move into Libra on September 5th. It only spends 3 weeks in that sign, and it whizzes into Scorpio on September 27th, and then all of a sudden we lose our sense of fair play. We want results right now. And so that's the background of the month, and it's quite a month.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that any sort of forward movement we've felt in the last month or two, that there's going to be a feeling of that going backwards? Like if things have felt to sort of ease up or open up or move forward, do you feel like there's going to be that feeling of going backward or just more stuckness?
Okay, so you're a beach gal. You live in Hawaii. Standing in the ocean, the tide's coming in, tide's coming up. And yet on a good wave, that tide will come up. And just as another wave is coming in, it feels like your feet are being sucked out. It's not as simple as saying it's one direction or the other, because we have tides within tides and currents within currents. And yes, on one level, energetically, Mars is energetic. And so on the energetic level, we might feel like we can't express ourselves in the way we need to express it. But meanwhile, we might feel like our logic and our thinking and our, and what we want and our values become clearer. There may be other very positive forward movement, but somehow Saturn still has, you know, our hands tied or handcuffed.
Okay. So I was speaking to my yoga teacher after class, and she was talking about how she needed to take a trip over to Oahu. But, you know, we have that quarantine happening here where anywhere you go, when you come back, you have to take a 14-day quarantine. So this is making travel really hard for anybody. And I know there's all kinds of hands tied when it comes to travel everywhere. But one of the things she was kind of like, well, you know, hopefully soon I'll be able to do that. And I was kind of like, probably not so much. You know, like, do you want to know or do you not want to know? So one of the things we talked about is how the energy appears to be shifting. Like you said, there's like a whole, what exactly did you say? It was a new ball game. The next, when we have those squares towards the end, and she goes, well, I hope it's a good thing. So when that energy is shifting, and I think that's what everybody's feeling. It's like, okay, we know the energy is going to shift, but is that like a positive thing? Or is that going to be more of what we've experienced, but just like a different flavor. What's your sense on that?
I have no sense. It's not true. I have sense, but I don't know that it's common sense. My sense is that when we put these labels of good and bad on things, that's when we begin to get into trouble. Is it good or is it bad? It doesn't matter. That's not the issue. The issue is that it is, and I hate to say this in the current political context, it is what it is. How we react to it, however, is not it is what it is. And so how we react to it then makes it bad. If we're angry that we can't go to Oahu and we look at everything falling apart and, you know, we go through all these motions of what are we going to do with our anger, and we end up maybe even inadvertently taking it out on someone we love, because unfortunately often we express our pent up emotions where they feel safe. And so we pick a parent or a child, our parent or our child, or our spouse or lover or best friend. And we get pissed at them for something that is totally irrelevant, because we really have this pent up anger. Now, in that case, then it's bad. But I can take that same energy, and because squares are creative, there's a huge, storage. There's a huge built-up bank account, if you will, of creative energy, that if we can figure out how to manifest that energy, because, we think of Mars as anger, but Mars is also, we think of it as aggression, but Mars is about assertion. Mars is about the ego's creation of boundary. There are three planets that have to do with boundary creation in astrology. They are the Sun, which is the center. The Sun radiates out, and Saturn is the limit of that radiation. So the Sun and Saturn are the creation of the light, and the limit of that light reaches. Mars is how we take that energy and get it to the boundary. So Mars is how we create the edges in our life. Yeah, it's how we get angry. Why do we get angry? If I feel like someone has stepped on me physically or metaphysically, I want to reclaim my boundary. So I use my anger to say, in a healthy way, don't do that. This is my boundary. In maybe a less healthy way, I smack the person. In maybe the least healthy way, I shoot the person. But the point is that Mars is how I either defend my territory, or it's how I assert myself into new territory, which can be really healthy if it's done correctly. That's basically what self-expression is all about. But self-expression, when it becomes aberrant, when it becomes a projection of energy that should be there, but now it's here, then that self-expression becomes aggressive and it becomes offensive. And that becomes the whole colonial mindset is basically the fear. This is based upon Thomas Malthus, an economist from the early 17th century. And Thomas Malthus basically, it's called Malthusian economics. And Thomas Malthus basically convinced the Queen of England that there's a limited amount of resources in the world. It was just at that time beginning to be discovered that the Earth was a sphere and it was contained. And therefore, Malthus said, there's only so much out there. And at some point in time, we're going to run out of stuff out there, which means that there's not going to be enough to go around, which means that you're going to want your stuff and I'm going to want my stuff, and there ain't going to be enough for both of us. So that means I better get my stuff so that I have enough stuff so that when the stuff gets scarce, I can still feed myself, my countrymen, my family, whatever. So Malthusian economics is based upon an understanding of economic scarcity. And I would say that this also goes into the realm of emotions, that we as a culture, as a civilization, practice Malthusian emotional economics, which means that, wow, there isn't enough love to go around. And therefore, if you're loving someone else, I'm getting deprived of what I should have. And therefore, I'm going to be angry or jealous or whatever. And therefore, I'm going to limit your expression, because otherwise I'm not going to get mine. Now, the same response to emotional Malthusian economics and financial Malthusian economics is the understanding that there's really plenty to go around. It's just our distribution sucks. And this is a basic Buckminster Fuller concept, that there is enough resources to feed every man, woman, to feed and house every man, woman, and child on the planet. It just doesn't work when, when this percentage has all of this, and this percentage has nothing. And so that is, I think, part of why we get angry inappropriately. It's because we're afraid that something's going to happen, that we're not going to be left with what's rightfully ours, and therefore we take over all the countries around us so that they can't attack us. This is all, and I'm not going political, this is all personal. It's what we do in our lives.
Yeah, definitely. That feeling that we have to protect in order to live. I mean, it comes back down to, it's just survival. Basic survival. Yeah.
Well, and the illusion though is, and sometimes it's not an illusion, this is what's tricky, but the illusion is that we need to assert ourselves and be on the offensive rather than be on the defensive, because by the time we're on the defensive, it's too late. Someone is already aggressing into our territory, already taking what's rightfully mine, whether it's emotional, physical, or financial.
Remember it was several months ago, I was reading that book. I cannot remember the name of it right now. I could look it up and put it in the show notes. But that had studied people in crisis, and the story that was being told about the people in crisis versus the reality of what was actually happening. And the story being told was that, you know, people did have to protect their things against looters or rioters, or, you know, that there was this need, because humans were actually truly turning against each other, and there was this need to hoard and protect and defend. And yet when they look at what people were actually doing, so like the earthquake in San Francisco, and they went through a bunch of different crises, people were actually helping each other. They were actually generous. They were actually giving up their own in order to support other. But I think so much of the perception is perpetuated by these stories that continue to proliferate our psyche. And so we, without knowing what the reality is, we act based on the story that we've been told. And so much of what astrologers like you do is help us to expand the storyline, especially when it comes to things like Mars, which it couldn't be more, and Saturn even, which it couldn't be more appropriate to be doing right now, because if we're stuck in this idea that Mars is aggression and violence and war and conflict, we're just going to keep perpetuating that. And I'm not saying it's because of Mars. I'm just saying these are archetypal storylines that we're playing out as humans.
But we see that, I think, coming up through Vedic, Hellenistic, through the ancient traditions. And I'm a great fan of these ancient traditions. I think they're really important to get an understanding of where we're coming from. I think there's a lot of wisdom and a lot of very important techniques and concepts in all of the ancient wisdom teachings, astrology being tied to them. But the ancient world was very different than the modern world, and there wasn't the metaphysical subtleties that we have. The ancients lived in a real jungle, whether it was a jungle or a forest or a desert. Their life was about the physical, external, you know, it was about getting drinking water, about eating, about surviving on that level. For us, and I say us in a sense of the privileged us for sure, and that is, we live in an information jungle. We live in a jungle of data and of high frequency noise. And so Mars at one time had to be physical. That's what it was. It was the god of war. And yet we know now that from a standpoint of psychodynamic astrology, that the wars that we fight externally are largely projections of the internal wars that go on within our psyche. And they're just as violent, but they're not about externally fighting and beating someone else up. And certainly on the political scene, there is a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? Promulgation. There's a lot of expanding the idea that they will take it away. They will take my freedom away. They will prevent me from, you know, living my life. They are the cause of the problem. And therefore that fear is divisive and it pits me against someone else rather than our natural inclination, which I agree with you. I mean, people ultimately, if it comes right down to it, most people will do what they need to do to survive. But if they're surviving, most people, I think, also have an instinct toward compassion. You know, and I love the Dalai Lama's line. He goes, when possible, be compassionate. It's always possible.
Yeah. Okay. Another question for you. So we have this really interesting thing of Jupiter, Saturn, and Pluto starting to go direct, and yet being at a standstill because of that shift in motion, correct? Mm-hmm. And then we have Mars going retrograde and also being somewhat at a standpoint because he's shifting direction.
Right.
When will we start to feel a more forward momentum from Jupiter, Saturn, and Pluto? When will their direct motion start to be felt?
I think that by early October. I mean, Pluto is the last of the three outers to turn direct. It turns direct on October 4th. But I think by then we'll already be feeling Jupiter. Jupiter, you know, Jupiter gains some speed by the end of the month. Jupiter is already moved. It's moved a couple of degrees by the end of the month. And so we'll feel some of that, but we'll still feel energetically, or we may feel energetically trapped. And I say, I went from we will to we may, is we won't feel energetically trapped if we understand that like a capacitor, we're still building our charge and it's not time for the strike yet. But that doesn't mean we should be trying to suppress the charge from building. In an electric circuit, the capacitor builds a charge, pops. It can do that 100,000 times in a second. But it's the same thing as the lightning building a charge and striking. It's a Uranian thing. If there's no building of the charge, the lightning can't strike. And so I'm not suggesting that we should avoid building the charge. I'm suggesting that we should save the strike for when Mars is ready to move direct. And of course, the political person in me says, well, the time to strike would be on Election Day in the United States. Now, that's not for everyone around the world, but that would be a time, because Mars will not be direct then, but Mars will be stationary. It turns direct the week after. We also have a Mercury that has retrograde coming out of retrograde right on election or right at election time. And so I think that can be a very important fulcrum point. And again, I'm not predicting what will happen, but I'm predicting that whatever happens, it'll be a point of no return. It'll be a fulcrum point. And from that point, the energy will begin to move very quickly, even though now I'm talking now the first week of November or so, because by the middle of November, Mars is moving direct. And although it's gaining power very slowly or gaining direct motion very slowly, it's still changed. Something has changed. But I think we'll notice the outer planets, even toward the end of September, middle end of September, as Jupiter turns direct, but it's going to be slow. When Jupiter turns direct, what changes is our level of confidence, our ideas, that higher mind begins to move forward. And of course, the danger here, and especially since planets are going to be squaring Jupiter and trining Jupiter this month, the danger is to let that overconfidence make us lazy. This is not about burying the need for Mars to take action. It's about playing it strategically so that when we take action, our actions count.
You know, you've been saying this all year, that this is not the time to let our weariness or our exhaustion from the the experience of all this to make us inert, you know, and to give up, that there's going to be times where we feel like we need to give up or want to give up, but that we need to keep going. And that's what I'm hearing here is you're saying, you know, this, we're going to feel this forward momentum and we're going to want to be able to express it, but it's not the right time. So just, I like this idea of building the bank account, like just build the energy, build the momentum, and then it'll be so much stronger when we actually have that opportunity to express it forward.
Now, as we get closer to the end of the month, we have another little thing that kind of sneaks in here. And I detail this in depth in my full monthly forecast, which is available on YouTube. But I don't want to go too far into this. But we get a series of irritating quincunxes. And for those of you who know my work on quincunxes, or any astrologer's work for that matter, first of all, we say it wrong. I say it wrong too. We all say quincunx. It's actually quinkunx, because unx is 12 and quink is 5, and a quinkunx is 5/12 of a circle. To Ptolemy, the 5/12 aspect, which is an opposition but one sign away from an opposition. So let's say we have all these planets in Capricorn. The opposition would be Cancer. But one sign away from that would be Leo. So it's the one sign away from the opposition. And Ptolemy said that a quincunx was basically a non-aspect. In fact, he called them inconjuncts. The planets couldn't see each other. So we have toward the end of the month, we have Mercury quincunx Neptune, the Sun quincunx Mars, Venus quincunx Jupiter, Venus then quincunx Neptune, then Venus quincunx Pluto, then Venus quincunx Saturn, all as it's moving through Leo, it's quincunxing all of the Capricorn planets. And it's almost like the whole second half of the month is peppered with these quincunxes that, unlike squares are creative because they can be resolved. You know, squares are unstable, but when you put energy into them, something happens. Quincunxes, I refer to quincunxes like the mosquito in the tent. It's like, just as you're falling asleep, you hear the mosquito, you get up to get the damn mosquito, and it's gone. And so in a way, as we get closer to the end of September, we get our it's like our fuse becomes shorter and shorter, which encourages quick reactions because we want to fix whatever the petty annoyances are and the deeper assaults on our values. Remember, these are Venus quincunxes, but there's no quick way out. And that's the thing to remember as we get closer to the end of the month. This is not terrible. It's only annoying because we can't deal with it. If we learn to live with the mosquito for the few weeks, eventually we'll open up the doors of the tent and the mosquito will fly out. And so the practice is to keep reminding ourselves not to get sucked into the temptation of falling victim to circumstantial entrapment. You know, there's no question in my mind that, again, on the political scene, we will be entrapped more and more to take action against something, someone, you know, that and in a way, the harder and faster and more violently and more Martian we react, the less we will have to give when it's absolutely the most critical and most important. So energy management is absolutely crucial, because we can't just deny our anger. We have to find ways of keeping our emotions flowing while at the same time we're practicing patience.
Wow. You know, I dance hula. This is what's reminding me of. And when you're on the stage and there's a mosquito or a fly or anything, you can't swat it away. You have to still dance and smile and just be present. And so I just have that image, because you know, my daughter Sophia, she'll be on stage and she's, you know, pulling at her costume and, you know, swatting things away, and she just doesn't care. And I was like, Sophia, when you're on stage, you can't, you just got to be there, you know. But it sounds like we need to have some of that, just that tolerance for the annoyance, the irritants, the frustration, know that we can't give into that instant gratification of like, get off me, get away from me, stop, right? Okay, so there's so much here. And I see that maybe we have a question. Okay. I don't know if you want to answer this, but this is from Rebecca. When will it be time for the charge to strike? When will it be time for the charge to strike?
Well, I think I already answered that. I mean, that yeah. really, you know, I think that we'll be feeling it. I think that by the middle of October, we'll definitely be feeling it, but it's not until Mars stops its backward movement. Now, a traditional astrologer might say it's not until Mars turns direct on October 11th, I think. It's on Mars turns direct on, I'm sorry, I meant November. November 13th. Mars turns direct on November 13th. So the astrological wisdom would be it's not time to strike until Mars begins moving forward. But I think it's actually, there'll be so much charge that it's really when Mars stops going backwards. So, and one might say, well, that's really November 13th. Well, technically, yes. But Mars is moving backwards at a pretty good clip. And, you know, Mars retrogrades from 28 degrees of Aries all the way back to 15 degrees of Aries. And though the week around November 13th, Mars, even though it's still retrograding, is barely moving. And that then, I think, becomes the, you know, the significant piece in this. And so on November 1st, Mars reaches 15 degrees of Aries going backwards. It reaches into the 15 degrees on November 3rd. Mars is at 15 degrees when it turns direct on the 13th, and it doesn't reach 16 degrees until November 25th. Got it? So when Mars stops, it's rapid, it's slow, it's retrograding and slowing down, I think then that becomes time when we begin to act. And Election Day falls, you know, it falls right in the middle there. And, you know, that Mercury also, you know, it's retrograde. Mercury ends its retrograde on November 2nd, November 3rd. Do I have that here? Yeah, November 3rd, Mercury turns direct on November 3rd. You know, that is Election Day.
It's incredible.
You know, I mean, and so that direct turn of Mercury, even though it's not moving, and, you know, that is actually a very potent moment in time. And here's another crazy thing, is that that Mercury that has stationed and turns direct on November 3rd, just for the record, so people have it, Mercury turns retrograde mid-October, October 13th, and it turns direct on Election Day, technically in the morning. Does that matter? Maybe. But I think that that's just an indication that it's going to take days, weeks, maybe months to get a winner out of this election. I don't think it's going to be clear, and I don't think you need to be an astrologer to see that, you know, handwriting on the wall. But what I do find interesting is that Mercury turns direct on the morning of Election Day at 25 degrees and 54 minutes, 25 degrees of Libra and 54 minutes. That's almost 26 degrees. Saturn in the sky is at 26 degrees of Capricorn. And so Mercury is moving direct, and it still has yet to move exactly through its square to Saturn, which happens pretty quickly. I mean, it happens within the next day and a half, because Mercury when it changes direction is much faster than the other planets. Anyhow, I didn't mean to get ahead of ourselves month-wise, but in answer to the question, I think by the beginning of November, we're going to be, we're going to be up to our eyeballs and ready to act. But here's the tricky thing. Because of the nature, again, I come back to voting, we can't decide that we're going to vote on election day necessarily and know our vote's going to get through. And so in a way, it's back to that long range thinking that it may be we're doing things now that don't have impact until that Mercury and Mars both turn direct in November.
Okay. All right. So we have the theme of the month, hold your fire, that we may feel this sense of urgency, this mounting sense of urgency to do something, to take action. And it's not about not doing anything, but it's more about almost like not having the expectation that our doing is going to create some immediate result, that we're actually doing things inch by inch, you know, day by day that are building a momentum, but we might not necessarily see the outcome of that for a while still. And just knowing that, being like, just kind of sinking into that.
Yeah.
We also,
the great Swami said, yard by yard, it's hard, inch by inch, it's a cinch.
Okay. Yard by yard, it's hard. Inch by inch is a cinch. Nice. Okay. So we may feel like we're pushed to our limits. We have all of these, the big planets slowing, all turning direct, but slowing down. So Jupiter, Saturn, Pluto. I keep having this visual of, I have three brothers who all played football. So I can't like get rid of some of this imagery, but it seems like they've been in this like huddle. Jupiter, Saturn, and Pluto are like, have been in this huddle, and that there's this moment it's gonna be like, okay, break. And they're gonna get in their positions here this month. They're gonna take their positions. They're not gonna be like really going into the next play, but they're taking their positions.
And Jupiter is the first one to break rank. Jupiter is the first one, and he's right now behind the three of them. But over November, December, January, Jupiter catches up to Pluto and then catches up to, in December, catches up to Saturn late December, early January, and then, you know, and then breaks free completely. And I've said this before, but that's my saving grace in all of this, is that Jupiter becomes the leader of the pack. The other, right now we've been in a situation where Jupiter is behind and is being restrained by both Pluto and by Saturn, and that shifts.
All right, that is promising. And so Jupiter becomes the quarterback, essentially.
Maybe, or the leader. You know, it's hard to tell whether a good quarterback is really behind the scrimmage, you know, kind of commanding what's up front, or whether the quarterback is really up front metaphysically and everyone else is kind of behind. Yes, the image is well taken.
Okay. All right. So this is not a time to be passive, to not avoid confrontation, but also not to like stimulate and get right there in the center of these kind of
de-escalate. De-escalate.
There we go. I keep thinking of this U2 song, Running to Stand Still. Do you remember that one? Mm-hmm. You got to cry without weeping, talk without speaking, scream without raising your voice. It has that kind of like that energy to it. Okay. But in the meantime, something we can do very tangibly is continue to set our sights high. So continue to look into the future, continue to vision, continue to dream, continue to stay in the realm of possibility of what can be on the other side of all of this. So don't lose hope. And keep looking.
It's the when they go low, we go high. And just for clarity, that's not when they go low, we get high.
Thank you for clearing that up. Yeah, okay. okay, don't give in to temptation for immediate gratification. At the Virgo new moon, we will be planting seeds, but plant small seeds. This isn't the time to be planting those like 2-year, 3-year, 5-year, 10-year visions. If this is like smaller little seeds we can plant into the ground. remember this image or this idea that you're building the bank account, you're building your energy, you're building momentum that will be used eventually. And so the more we can build and cultivate and protect our energy, energy management, the more we can manage our energy, the more we'll have.
Remember, Saturn likes preparation and Saturn likes organization. I think of the Thomas Jefferson line, the more I prepare, the luckier I get, you know?
Yes. You know, it also reminds me of this book that's so good that I had my whole team read at the beginning of the year called Chop Wood, Carry Water. And in this book, I can't remember.
By Rick Fields. I know that book.
Who?
Isn't that by Rick Fields?
There's a couple different versions and they're not the same. No, that's not the author's name. I'll have to get that for you guys too. But in it, there's a story of bamboo and how, and it's probably a particular kind of bamboo, but there is a kind of bamboo that you plant and you water every single day. And it is not until 5 years of watering that it shoots up like 90 feet or something crazy. I could be totally off with my number on that, but it shoots up into the air all of a sudden after all that time. And that feels very Saturnian to me too. Like you just, every day you're tending to what needs to be tended to, you're nourishing, you're nurturing, you're focusing and letting go of how long it's going to take, when you're going to get there, you know, those kinds of things that are hard to do sometimes. Okay. And at the end of the month, okay, if there's times where you might feel weary, don't give up, keep going. At the end of the month, we have the quincunxes, which might make you feel like you have a short fuse. You want to fix the petty annoyance, but there's no quick way out. So you're not going to be able to swat away the annoying thing and just have it be gone. It's, you need to just learn how to be with it, deal with it, manage your own energy around it. Smile while you're on stage, even though you're getting bit by a mosquito, and and then just know that it's gonna ease out. Yes, exactly. And if you want to learn about quincunxes, that's one of the bonuses you get when you join the Astrology Foundation's course.
That's right.
So is Rick's teaching his mastery class on quincunxes. So you can check that out too. Anything else you want to add? I mean, that's a nice, good summary and. We can feel that energy pretty well.
You know, some months are much harder to distill into a concept. There are some months where the energy is all over the place, other months where not much happens. But this month is kind of clear if we stand back and look at all the little pieces going on. Energetically, it's, you know, to me, you know, it's pretty clear. Now, different astrologers have different takes on the same thing, just like two people can see a sporting event and have very different analyses of that same event. But this month to me seems pretty clear. And that the importance of Mars in the bigger scenario, and that whole idea, you know, of, you know, focus on the long haul, focus on, you know, on long-term change rather than immediate victory or gratification.
Very good. All right. If you want to plant some long-term seeds and get your astrology foundation underneath you, it's a good time to go check out the class. So you can go to astrologyhub.com/foundations. Foundations, very Saturnian. We're getting our astrological foundations in place. And again, like Rick said, even if you already have a solid foundation, it's always nice to have new nuances and flavors that you can add to the way that you're practicing your craft. So check that out, astrologyhub.com/foundations. Anything you want people to go on over to your Instagram? Sure.
Always.
Always.
Yeah. Instagram. Yeah. My Instagram hit 10,000 this week.
Woohoo! That's a huge number.
This is an interesting thing because my assistant Gail, who I know you know, Amanda, yes. And I set the goal. We started the new Instagram page that was separate from my personal Instagram page, specifically to do astrology. And we began that on the new moon at the end of February, the new moon in Pisces. We hit 10,000 on the day of the full moon in Pisces. Oh, and one of the astrological pieces of lore is that the new moon is intention and the full moon is fulfillment. But normally we think of the new moon is the intention and 2 weeks later at the following full moon is fulfillment. But there's a larger cycle when we look at any new moon. That moon is full in the same sign 6 months later. And in this case, it came out to that exactly. So I hit 10,000 and, you know, my thanks to Gail for her assistance and help in this, but the Instagram is, the account is Rick Levine Astrologer. And there's a daily blurb on that every day.
It's amazing that you just brought that up, that new moon thing, the end of February and then the full moon, because that was the new moon in Pisces and then the full moon in Pisces we just had. Do you know Dr. Christian Northrup?
Yeah.
She loves astrology. She talks about astrology a lot. I watch her on Instagram, and she was telling a very similar story of a seed that she planted in like around February 24th, 25th, and how it just came to full circle at the full moon. So I actually haven't paid a whole lot of attention to this, and I think I need to start doing that.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for being here every week. Thank you for continuing to give your enthusiastic feedback. We love it. We love to hear from you. So thank you so much for being a part of this community. And thank you, as always, for making astrology a part of your life. And we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode. Take care.